A lot of us like to find people we can identify with who've been through different things like we have. And, you know, it's easier to talk to somebody who's been through something like you have than to talk to somebody who's not familiar with your particular situation. That happened to me just this past Monday night, a week ago. Tomorrow night, I'm on the way home from the church, and I get a phone call, and it's a friend of mine in Alabama, and he says, "I've got bad news, and I need to talk to you." And this particular guy, he's not, I'm not sure that he's a believer, but he called me because he knew that I could identify with what was going on. It seems that this guy, who is the president of a very successful corporation, his corporate lawyer and his family were planning a trip a week ago. They were to leave a week ago yesterday. And Friday, a week ago, they were all planning to leave. His two daughters, who were in college, were on their way to southern Alabama. And he was actually on his way home from work. He gets home from work, and his wife's not there yet, and she had been somewhere. And about 7 o'clock, the highway patrolman shows up, and his wife had been killed in a 3-car accident that afternoon. It's a kind of a rough way to start your vacation. Well, they had, of course, the girls got there, and a week ago tonight, they had the receiving at the church they went to, and sometime during the receiving, the oldest daughter, who's 21, she passed out and died during the receiving. So when in the space of 48 hours, this man not only lost his wife, who was 49 years old, but he lost his daughter of 21. So my friend calls me. He calls me because he knows that I can identify. He knows I can identify with something that this man is going through. Just the collapse of his entire world in 48 hours. Everything probably that this man had built together in his family, they were evidently a very happy family, and he is a very successful lawyer, but everything that was important to him was gone. He has his other daughter, but it's hard for all of us to imagine what that can be like. I mean, unless you've been there, it's hard to understand. Now, I can tell you because I've been there. And, you know, that's kind of like different situations we get into. We like it when we can go and be with someone who can identify with where I'm at. And we want to look at tonight this passage in Hebrews chapter 5, and if you haven't turned there yet, that's where we're going to be. But when these things happen to us, most of the time we're all wondering, you know, why does God do this? You know, why is he allowing this in my life? Now, I admit that this example is very extreme in some respects, but all of us have different things that happen to us. And whether or not it's we've lost our job or our marriage has broken down or we have a child that's in rebellion, there's something that happens. And oftentimes we say, you know, why does God, you know, do this or allow this to happen in my life? And we want to know, how can God identify with me? You know, how's that going to work out? Well, I want to encourage you tonight because God has provided a way for that to be worked out for all of us, and that's through his son, Jesus Christ. And I want to do something a little bit unusual, And I want to tell you the ending at the beginning. And I'm going to read it to you because I want to make sure that I don't mess up so that you can get this. And it's going to be the heart of what I want to say tonight. But the point of the message tonight is, as you think about the struggles in your life, consider Jesus. Think about Jesus. Because he is the source of our eternal salvation. He's the source of our eternal salvation, and he is a high priest who can identify with all those who obey him. And the verses we're going to look at are going to teach us that Jesus can identify with everything that we go through. He's not somewhere else that he can't identify. He knows what it is to weep. He knows what it is to suffer. He knows what it is to die. But the great, tremendous truth is that his obedience makes it possible for you and I to be identified not only with him, but to have an access to God the Father. And I would really encourage you tonight, Matt's prayed it, Peter talked about it this morning, let's all sharpen our ears to hear. Let's not be dull of hearing tonight. This is important. Let's look here, starting in chapter 5, verses 1 through 4. We're going to take this in three parts, verses 1 through 4, 5 through 6, and then 7 through 10. It says in chapter 5, verse 1, "For every high priest taken from among men is appointed on behalf of men and things pertaining to God, in order to offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins. He can deal gently with the ignorant and misguided, since he himself also is beset with weakness. And because of it, he is obligated to offer sacrifices for sins, as for the people, so also for himself. And no one takes the honor to himself, but receives it when he is called by God, even as Aaron was." Basically, these four verses outline the old priesthood. That's what they're explaining, what the old priesthood was like. And there's four main things you need to see here. One is that God is the one who called the priest. God is the one who appointed him. The man didn't just decide he was going to be a priest. God called him. And in that particular day and age, God called him before he was even born, because it was of a particular family that God would call the priesthood. And God is the one who marked him out. God did that. Secondly, it was the job of the priest to represent the people before a holy God. And he did this by offering sin offerings and sacrifices. He did that regularly. So it was his job to represent the people before God. But there's a curious part of that is that everybody knew this guy. You know, he grew up around them. They knew his wife. They knew his children. They knew his friends. And of course, his wife knew him. His children knew him. His friends knew him. Everybody around him. And they knew what he was really like. I mean, he was just like us. I mean, if we look around each other, you know, we all know about each other. And the high priest, I mean, he was a normal guy. But God had called him to a special calling to represent the people before him. So one of the things he always had to do was, before he could offer these offerings and sacrifices, he had to offer one for himself. I mean, he was not worthy to go offer the sacrifices because he was a sinner. So he himself had to always go and offer the sacrifice for himself first. Then he could offer a sacrifice for others. And hopefully, because he knew his own sin, this gave him the capacity, as it says there, he had the capacity to deal with others gently. He had the capacity to know, you know, I'm a sinner. I know what it's like to sin. And so, therefore, he could relate to his own people. And that was a good thing. He knew how to deal with them. He knew how to identify with them. And this high priest, the tremendous thing about him is that he was such that everybody could relate to him. We could identify with him. You know, that's one of the interesting things about being here on staff is that you get to be with people like Peter Hubbard, but he's just like we are, you know? I get to work with him 5, 6, 7 days a week, and, you know, when you work with somebody, you learn a lot about them. They're not perfect. They're not perfect. And it's a good thing. We can identify with that. And the high priest under the old priesthood, he was a man that everybody could identify with. But look what it says next in verses 5 and 6. It says, so also Christ did not glorify himself so as to become a high priest, but he who said to him, thou art my son, today I have begotten thee. Just as he says also in another passage, thou art a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. Now, this is the inauguration of a new priesthood. A new priesthood. Jesus Christ, the Son of the living God. And, you know, when this priesthood is inaugurated, I don't know about you, but all of a sudden, this identification that I could have with the priest like the old priest, it shifts. How can I identify with the perfect, sinless Son of God as my high priest? I mean, look what Hebrews has told us that about him, that God's Son is the heir of all things. He's the creator of all things, that he is the radiance of God's glory. 5 times in the book of Hebrews, we are told that he is sitting in the place of highest honor at the right hand of God, that he's greater than the prophets. He is greater than Moses. He's greater than the angels. He's greater than Aaron. All these things about Jesus, they're just unbelievable. How can I relate to that? You see the problem? I mean, if he were just like us, that's pretty easy to relate to. But he's not like us at all, is he? Or is he? Look at verses 7 through 10. In the days of his flesh, he offered up both prayers and supplications with loud cryings and tears to the one able to save him from death. And he was heard because of his piety. Although he was a son, he learned obedience from the things which he suffered. And having been made perfect, he became to all those who obey him the source of eternal salvation, being designated by God as a high priest according to the order of Melchizedek. How can we relate to this high priest? God shows us right here. First of all, I can relate because of his priestly response in his flesh. It says here, in the days of his flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications, loud, strong crying cries and tears to God. Can you identify with that? Can you identify with a time in your life when you did that? I can. I can. And it says here that even Jesus wept. He's offering up strong cries and tears unto God, asking for deliverance to save him out of death. And it says he was heard because of his reverence, because of his devoutness. This is a picture, this verse is a picture of his earthly ministry here on earth. Jesus Christ, as a man, fully participated in the human condition and was tested in every respect like we are. If you look back to chapter 2, you can see this, starting with verse 14. says, since then the children share in flesh and blood, he himself likewise also partook of the same, that through death he might render powerless him who had the power of death, that is the devil, and might deliver those who through fear of death were subject to slavery all their lives. And look at this, for assuredly he does not give help to angels, but he gives help to the descendant of Abraham. And here's the key. Therefore, he had to be made like his brethren in all things. Why? There it is. He might become a merciful and high priest in the things pertaining to God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For since he himself was tempted in that which he suffered, he is able to come to the aid of those who are tempted. Jesus Christ is a high priest who can identify with me. He knows what I'm feeling. He's felt things that I've felt. He is not removed from me. He understands me. And the thing here is that's a great thing for us. And this should be an exciting thing for us, that we have a high priest who we can identify with. He is the Son of God, but I can relate to him because in the days of his flesh, in some unbelievable way, he was just like me. Just like me. He cries out to God, and guess what? God hears him, and God answers his prayer and takes him, like it says here, takes him completely through even death. He leads him, and he answers his prayer. He leads him through death into resurrection. Isn't that tremendous? God hears him and answers. And, you know, Jesus' prayer there is his submission to his Father, to God's will and God's sovereignty. I can identify with that. I had that same opportunity to submit myself to God's will, to submit myself to God's sovereignty over the events in my life, even to the point of death. I can identify with him because of what he's done, his response by his flesh. Secondly, I can relate to him, I can identify with him by examining his education as a son. Look here again at verse 8. It says, although he was a son, he learned obedience from the things which he suffered, and having been made perfect. You know, I told Peter that the exciting thing about having this opportunity to speak is it has forced me to do what he's asked all of us to do the last 2 months, and that's read this book over and over and over and over and over again. And if you have not done that, let me encourage you that, because it really helps you to see the big picture. And one of the biggest things we can see is that God loves his son. And his son, I mean, this book is about his son over and over and over and over again. It's about my son. It's about my son. But then when you read this, it says, although he was a son, he learned from the things which he suffered obedience. And I guess, you know, part of the thing is we figure, well, you know, he's the son. What does he have to learn? He's the son, you know, shouldn't it just be easy for him to do what God's called him to do? I mean, shouldn't it just be a smooth sailing? Because he's the son. And, you know, this kind of, you know, you read this and it catches you by surprise. What's going on here? You know, typically, and you have on a human plane, a father-son relationship is not always the easiest. And you would think that, but on a heavenly plane, you know, Jesus said he did everything the Father told him to do. So he's the perfect son. He's not an imperfect son. But there's something happening here that says, you know, what's going on? He's got to learn obedience. He's got to suffer. What's that about? How does that happen? But the Word of God says just what it says there. He had to learn this. He had to go through it. And again, the point is that the biggest reason is I can relate to that. I can relate to that. But you know, Jesus did, he learned obedience perfectly. It wasn't a matter of him having to learn obedience like you and I. I mean, his obedience is going through what God had laid out for him to do. And that's what he did. It wasn't a matter of, you know, don't do this, son. No. God had laid out a plan for Jesus for his whole life. And in his obedience, he went through the plan all the way to completeness. That's how he learned his obedience. He learned in the doing of what God had called him to do. It wasn't a matter of, you know, well, I don't know if I really like the plan, God. No, I always do what the Father tells me to do. But he had to go through it. And going through it was not easy. In fact, this obedience is pictured in Philippians chapter 2, where Jesus, it says, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. That's the picture of the obedience here. Christ was so obedient to his Father, but he had to learn to go through that, and he went through all the way, even death on the cross. You know, in his obedience, Jesus walked the path. God appointed him to walk, and he walked it all the way through. He was faithful all the way to the end. But it says that he learned this obedience through what he suffered. And again, this is why this book of Hebrews is so powerful, and as Peter mentioned this morning, how it's so interwoven. If you look back again at chapter 2, you see this happening, how he had to learn obedience through what he suffered. Chapter 2, verse 9 says, "But we do see him who has been made for a little while lower than the angels, namely Jesus, because of the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. For it was fitting for him, for whom are all things, and through whom are all things, in bringing many sons to glory, to perfect the author of their salvation through suffering." You see it? God had to bring his son through an unbelievable suffering so that we could relate to him. We could be identified with that suffering. And he made him perfect. And the idea there is an idea of completeness. Idea of being totally complete. In fact, this is another theme throughout Hebrews, is this idea of perfectness. Perfectness. 13 times in the book it's talked about to be made perfect. And even this idea is so great because we see this in the perfection is that he endured to the end. And that's why, like, when we get there, we're going to be so thrilled. But it says in chapter 12, verse 2, that we are those who are going to fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of God. He learned through his obedience. He learned through his suffering. And, you know, now he has been crowned by God. He's been lifted up, and he's been made perfect. So I can relate to him by what he's gone through. You know, there's nothing that we can suffer through, and honestly, none of us here, of course, have struggled or suffered to the point of death, but Christ has. We can relate to him because he's been there. We can relate to him because of his education. Thirdly, I can relate to him because of his priestly provision of eternal salvation. It says here again, and having been made perfect, he became to all those who obey him the source of eternal salvation. Jesus became the source, the author of his eternal salvation to the ones who obey him. He endured to the end. And this should give all of us hearts that rejoice. You know, Jesus did not stop short. Not one time in his life did he pull up and say, I'm not going any farther. Not one time. He endured to the end. That's why he can be the source of our eternal salvation. He has finished the race that God laid out for him. He's done it. And that's what, you know, I know that part's kind of hard for us to relate to. Only thing I can think about relating to is people who run, because I used to run, and it's a tremendous thing when you see the finish line and you cross it. There's nothing that God asked Jesus to do that he didn't finish all the way. He endured to the end. He became the author of eternal salvation. And that's why it says in Acts 4:12, neither is there salvation in any other name, for there is no other name under heaven given among men whereby we can be saved. Jesus Christ is our high priest. He is the source of our salvation. He and he alone. There's no other one to turn to. You know, there's no other options. He is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the source of eternal salvation. Our problem is, oftentimes, we're not too concerned about our eternal salvation. You know, we're more concerned about the temporal, the things that just make life, passable. You know, when the car works every morning when you get up. You know, when I get to my job and, you know, it's a good day at work. You know, I have enough money to pay my bills. We're more like George Bailey. Y'all remember George? It's a Wonderful Life. A lot of us are like George. You know, George, if you're not familiar with the story, I don't know how you could not be familiar with the story, but George is this average guy, and he lives in a little town, and all of his life he's always just barely making it, but he does some great things, and he's not even aware that he's touching people's lives, and he has a little savings and loan business, and he always seems to be doing something for everybody else, you know, as it's really not much for himself. And then the big tension comes in this movie when the little savings and loan, which, you know, just always is just barely making it. When the savings and loan, George has his uncle working there, and he loses a large sum of money. And actually, if you know the movie, it's not that, I mean, there's a arch enemy in the story, Mr. Potter, and Mr. Potter has actually gotten a hold of the money, and even though he knows to give it back to George, he doesn't give it back to him. And so George realizes without this money, his world is crashing. It's crashing down on himself. And, you know, we're kind of like George Bailey sometimes. You know, it doesn't take much for us sometimes to allow our world to crush in on us. And George, I mean, goodness gracious, he lets his world crush into him so much that he goes out and he says, I don't want to live anymore. I can't live anymore. And I think some of us can identify with that. There's things in our lives, and we say, you know, I just don't know if it's worth it. Now, you know, movies being like they are, it just can't end that way. So in one of those very strange ways that Hollywood depicts God. Right at the moment where George would think about taking his life is interrupted by this angel named Clarence. And if y'all remember Clarence, he's got to help George to earn his wings, whatever that means. And, you know, George is there at the point where he's going to say, you know, life is not worth living. I want to die. I wish I had never been born. And that's when Clarence pops into the picture. Y'all remember he falls in the river, and George does what George always does. He jumps in the river and saves this, you know, drowning angel. And what George doesn't realize is he's gotten his wish. He's never been born. He's never been born. And so when they proceed to go back into town, this town where George has lived all his life, all the relationships he's had with people, his whole life is not like the town that he left. In fact, the town is a seat of immorality, drunkenness. None of the people are like the way George remembered. And for that matter, none of the people don't even know who George is. But George knows everybody. It's kind of it's a terrible spot. You know, do you think about it? George knows everybody. They don't know him, but everybody is totally different. I mean, the guy who he kept from passing out the pharmacist, the guy who he kept from passing out the poisonous pills, he's a drunk. You know? George's mother doesn't know him. George's wife has never, ever been married. She's a spinster working at the library. But I think one of the key moments is when they go out to the end of town, Clarence and George, and George previously had helped a lot of people. And one of the things he had helped them was to get a house, you know. And so they built this little development, and I forget what it's called, but he goes out there and there's no houses. What's there? Anybody remember? Cemetery. It's a cemetery. And then he walks up and there's a headstone. And whose name is on the headstone? George's brother. And he said, this is impossible. He says, and Clarence tells him, no, George, remember, you were never born. He says, no. My brother was a war hero. He saved all those men on that ship. And Clarence says, no, George. Your brother drowned because you weren't there to save him as a young boy. All those men on the ship, they drowned. All of what you're seeing, because you weren't there, all this stuff that you see happened. And then it hits George. It's over. He wants to live again. You know, he doesn't like the fact that this could have been what happened because he wasn't around. And so, you know, the end of the story, Clarence earns his wings, George gets his money, everybody's really happy. But you know what? George learned a huge lesson. And I want to apply it. Hopefully that you'll see this. George had been the source of a temporal salvation, quote unquote, for these people. Very temporal. He was a man that they could go to and count on. But what did he do? Sure, he did good things for a lot of people. But they were temporary. They had a house to live in. They had good friends, good marriage. But it was temporary. It was not eternal. But you know, a lot of us are right there. We do a lot of things to satisfy our temporal situation, but we're not concerned about our eternal situation. We're too satisfied that something else other than Jesus Christ could be the source of our salvation. We look to too many other things other than the source of our salvation being Jesus Christ, our high priest. Too many of us are there. We need to be those who are looking to Christ as the source of our eternal salvation, not to all that this world has to offer us. This world has nothing to offer us. But you know, it's really mysterious how we always think it does. We always think if the next deal, or if I meet the right person, this person, hey, there's only one right person to meet, the source of eternal salvation, Jesus Christ. You know, it's interesting that it says here that he is the source of salvation to those who obey. And this verb, obey, gives a sense of submitting one's will, understanding, conduct, or allegiance to the will of another. If Jesus Christ is your source, if you say that he is your source of eternal salvation, then you're going to obey him. You're going to obey him. We heard that this morning. Jesus said in Matthew 7, everyone who hears these words of mine and acts upon them, obeys, may be compared to a wise man who built his house on a rock. That's what we need to be doing. We need to be building our house on a rock. A rock, the Lord Jesus Christ, the source of our eternal salvation. You want to know if he's the source of your eternal salvation? You're going to obey him. It doesn't mean you're going to obey him perfectly, but you're going to want to. You're going to want to obey him. And it's very important because it does affect your eternal destiny. And not only that, it affects how you're going to live right now. Because I want to tell you, you never know when you're going to get the knock at your door. And it's the highway patrolman. And he says, your son is not here anymore. Or your wife is not here. You don't know when you're going to walk in your house one day and your wife and kids aren't there. You don't know when that's going to happen. That could happen. You don't know when the door's going to open and it's your boss walking in with the great news that you're no longer needed. You don't know when that's going to happen. But if you know Jesus Christ as the source of your salvation, when that happens, you're going to have a different kind of response. You're going to have a different kind of response. You're not going to be someone who shakes their fist at God and say, God, why did you do this to me? Because you're going to know if he's your source of eternal salvation, that he is a high priest that you can go to. You know that he is there. In fact, that's what it says in 4:16. It says, you'll be one that draws near with confidence to the throne of grace. You'll be that one. And when you do, you'll be that person who receives mercy and finds grace to help in time of need. Let me encourage you in that. Wrestle with that now. The day's coming when the knock at the door could come and you're going to have that opportunity. Are you going to say, God, I don't want to have a thing to do with you? Or are you going to cry out to a high priest who knows what it is to weep, who knows what it is to suffer, who knows what it is to have his guts ripped out because of the pain? I mean, we don't even have any idea what it was like for Jesus Christ to even be on this earth, to be a man amongst sin. I mean, Mike Kuchermeister just got back from Bangladesh, and if you talk to him, he will tell you that being in Bangladesh, there's probably not too many people in this room just want to hop on a plane and go over there and walk the streets. It's a horrible thing to see. And I want to tell you, when Jesus Christ walked the face of this earth, it was a horrible thing to see. It was a horrible thing to see. But because he is our high priest and he was going to identify with us, he did that. God planned that for him to do. And therefore, it's possible for me to relate to him as my high priest. So I can relate to Jesus because he's my high priest forever. It's not a temporary priesthood. Those first four verses in the old priesthood, there has to be a new priest come along because the old priests were dying off. Jesus is not like that. He's a high priest forever, forever and forever. I've got a high priest I can identify with because he's perfect. He knows what I'm going through. And he is the one who's at the right hand of God, and he is the one who is constantly praying for me. He's the one who is the perfect mediator between me and God. He is the one who has been touched with everything that's going to touch me. There's not one thing that's going to happen to me in my life that Jesus is not totally familiar with. Not one thing. Not one thing. Therefore, I can walk with great confidence knowing that I have a priest who's the source of my eternal salvation and that he's a priest forever. And I don't know about y'all, but I think that's pretty cool. I think it's more than cool. I think it's awesome. I think it's awesome. We have a high priest, and it's Jesus Christ, and he knows everything about us. Everything. He's not way off somewhere where I can just look over there and not be able to figure out how he can understand what I'm going through. No, the Word of God has told us in these verses is that he understands us. And he's been through what we're going through. And that's a great thing for us. That's an awesome thing for us. It is something that should get us up in the morning and put us on our face and say, God, I am so thankful that you're my eternal source of salvation. Help me today to love you. Help me today to want to obey you. Help me today to build my life, build my home on a rock, a foundation that will always be there, a foundation that I can stand on when I get the knocks on the door of my life. I tell you, that's when it happens. I told Peter a year and some months ago when our situation happened, I said, Peter, the biggest challenge right now for me is to know whether or not what I believe 40 years is true. And by God's grace, I knew it to be true then and I know it to be true now. And I would encourage you tonight, don't be dull of hearing. Think through these things we're talking about in Hebrews. Make sure where you are with God. Because there's going to come a day. There's going to come a day. I don't know when it is. I don't know what it's going to look like. Some of you are in different kinds of very difficult situations right now. And part of the problem is you haven't gone to the throne of grace and mercy. You know, and probably for some of you, you don't know the author of our eternal salvation. You don't have a relationship with the high priest. Very difficult to go to the high priest when you don't have a relationship with them. But that can happen tonight. You don't have to put that off anymore. You can have a relationship with them tonight. You can know what it is that when you walk through the valley, the shadow of death, that you will fear no evil because you have a high priest who's walking there with you. No matter what, he can be, even for you tonight, your high priest, he can be the one who we find constantly providing us grace and mercy in time of need. Don't look anywhere else. As you think about the struggles in your life, I would ask you again to consider Jesus, the source of eternal salvation, the high priest of all who obey him. These verses continue to teach us that Jesus, God's Son, can completely identify with every need of our hearts. He knows what it is to suffer. He knows what it is to weep. He knows what it is to endure. And his obedience to the Father makes it possible for us to be reconciled to God. I again ask you, don't miss his example or tune out his call to your heart.